A good Tuesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. It's great to have you alongside this morning. Appreciate you spending part of your Tuesday with us. Got a busy show lined up for you this morning, and we'll start it off right at the top with immigration. You know, it's so funny. I have YouTube TV, which is great, and there's one really cool feature that they, I guess, have added in YouTube TV where you can put multiple news networks on at the same time. So there's this like four box of channels. So it's Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and I think the BBC like World Service. So those are the four channels. And over the last couple of days, pretty much since the inauguration, so like middle part of last week, I've been keeping that on in my office pretty much all throughout the day. And it is amazing to watch the mainstream media, who ignored the issue of immigration for the better part of 3 years. It is amazing to watch these media outlets all of a sudden completely flip the script and start caring about immigration. It's completely illogical. If immigration wasn't a big enough deal to report on during Joe Biden's tenure in the Oval Office, then why should we care about it now? I think that's a fair question to levy against these media outlets. If we didn't care about the millions upon millions of individuals that were coming into the country illegally under Joe Biden's watch, when for all intents and purposes, he was standing at the U.S.-Mexico border waving in a NASCAR flag for these people to come into the country, if that didn't matter, then why should we care about illegal immigrants being deported? Why should we care about Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, or CBP, the Customs and Border Protection? Why should we care about them doing their job? Right? We didn't care about the laws on the books that were relevant in regards to illegal immigration. We sure as hell didn't care about that when Joe Biden was in office. But now we care that the Trump administration is enforcing laws in regards to immigration. It's very ironic to watch. I don't think it's a shocking revelation to most, if any of you, that the mainstream media has absolutely no standards at all. I'm not breaking any sort of news to you this morning. This is nothing that you are completely unfamiliar with. But I do have to, I kind of watch with a little bit of a smirk on my face, because they care so much about it now. These poor families getting separated. You got to have a little bit of humanity. You have to have a little bit of humility and compassion for these individuals, right? Well, we didn't have compassion or humility for the thousands and thousands of Americans that have been and were affected by the surge of illegal immigration. We didn't particularly care about that at all. We didn't care about individuals like Lake and Riley, who was, of course, murdered by an illegal immigrant who should not have been in the country. That wasn't a big deal. No problem there. But now I'm supposed to have my heart bleeding out onto the floor over individuals who are not legally in the country, broke laws to come into the country. We're not talking about people that have gone through or are going through legal immigration process. We're talking about people that are not in the country legally. I'm supposed to pour out my heart for those individuals. And I can't wrap my head around it. These outlets, in the case of this thing on YouTube TV, MSNBC and CNN, they completely misled and lied to the American people for years in regards to the issue of immigration. They attempted to shove it under the rug and hope that people wouldn't think, care, or know anything about it. That was their attempt. That was their goal. Why? Because it was very politically damning to the Democrats, very politically damning to Joe Biden and his great border czar and Vice President Kamala Harris, that the border was a complete and total madhouse. So they lied. they did not spend the amount of time covering it, which they should have. Like you saw outlets, including Fox News covering, and of course, social media covering. But even with the media's attempt to hide this issue, even with the media's attempt to lie to the American people over what was and what continues to be a major issue, it didn't work. Because our media landscape is changing dramatically. I mean, you listening to this show this morning, whether you're joining us live, which we do 7 o'clock weekday mornings on our YouTube, Rumble, and X account, or if you're listening to the podcast after the fact in whatever podcast app that you use, you are listening to this kind of break apart of corporate culture, this traditional media sense. I'm not the first to do it. I'm not going to pretend that I'm doing anything unique here. I mean, go back to the before the election, when you had individuals like Trump and J.D. Vance appearing on shows like Joe Rogan and Aiden Ross, sitting down with these interviewers and these hosts and pulling tens of millions of views. And so one of the biggest things, and you've probably heard this in the past, one of the most nefarious things that the media can do is not report a story. It's not their reporting of the story that's nefarious. It's when they ignore a story. And there are dozens, if not hundreds, of great examples of this over a period of time. But I truly believe that immigration and the issues that had taken that were taking place at our border for the better part of 3 years was a huge miscalculation by the media, by the Democrats, which of course are one and the same. The media in its current, the mainstream media, like mainstream cable news, at least on the Democrat side, really has one goal and one objective. That's to carry water for the Democrats. That's to spin political narratives in favor of the political party of which they subscribe, which is exclusively left-leaning. When you talk about outlets like CNN and MSNBC, and of course, the major cable, the major broadcast channels, CBS, NBC, ABC. Their goal, their objective is to carry water for the left, to spin the narrative and carry water for them and demagogue Republicans or anybody on the right for having either a differing opinion or just an opinion on something that is counter to what the left believes. That is what media in this country really has been boiled down to from the hierarchy, the mainstream standpoint. That's all that's left. And you can see the effect that that's having. CNN is bleeding viewership. There's a report this morning over at Breitbart that Jim Acosta got the boot over at CNN. Here's the headline over at Breitbart. Oliver Darcy, a former CNN reporter, said that sources within the network indicated that CNN veteran, who notoriously filibustered every press conference during Trump's first term, will be leaving the network in response to recent leadership decisions. Earlier this month, Darcy reported that CNN CEO Mark Thompson had booted Acosta from his 10 a.m. weekday time slot and planned to give him a graveyard shift from 12 a.m. to 2 a.m., so literally overnight, a move that Acosta views as a gesture towards President Trump. Darcy, a former CNN reporter, last night said that the 18-year veteran of the network has indicated to associates that he plans to leave the network after being removed from his 10 a.m. weekday time slot by the new CEO of CNN. One source close to the situation even went as far to say that Thompson booting Acosta from his morning slot was to, quote, throw a bone to Trump. I don't know as much of it as throwing a bone to Trump as much as it is trying to get an audience back. I mean, if you look at cable news ratings, they're atrocious right now for these networks. I mean, they are absolutely freaking terrible. This is from Adweek, and this is the week of January the 13th. So just a couple of weeks ago, This is their primetime viewership across the three major networks, Fox, MSNBC, and CNN. MSNBC is doubling, almost doubling CNN's numbers. Now, MSNBC has a much older audience. That's why you'll see here it says you know, primetime total viewers and then A 25 to 54. That's an audience aged 25 to 54. That's in media, that's kind of your peak audience, the individuals you're trying to reach the most. 25 to 54 is a pretty standard metric in media. So looking at this, you've got MSNBC with 64,000 viewers in primetime in that demographic, which is what advertisers look at when they're purchasing advertising. And then CNN, primetime, 93,000, compared to over 360,000 over at Fox News. And if you look at total day, which is not primetime, CNN is getting absolutely annihilated. They are getting blown out of the water. Nobody is watching CNN. If you have a cable subscription or an online streaming service subscription in America, you have access to CNN. And they can't even break 500,000 viewers in primetime. There are podcasts that are averaging significant more viewership daily than CNN is getting in their entire primetime lineup. And we're not even talking about the big podcasts. We're talking about middle tier to upper, you know, mid to high tier podcasts in terms of audience size that are absolutely blowing CNN out of the water. Greg Gutfeld, who hosts a show at 10 o'clock at night on Fox News, is getting more viewers on his single program than CNN is averaging during their primetime. And there's good reason for it, because the kind of content that outlets like CNN produce is garbage. It's not worth watching. There's nothing that you're getting out of that content. Now, if you're a deranged liberal and a deranged leftist, and you just need to hear Trump hate 24/7, well, then that's what you're watching. You're watching CNN or MSNBC. These outlets have planted their flag in the ground very clearly. And so you're probably going to see this attempt. It looks like it may already be happening over at CNN with Jim Acosta being booted from his position, that these networks have got to try and attempt to swing back towards the middle. Because if they don't, and I don't say this with any sort of inside knowledge, but knowing how the media industry works, knowing about how layoffs work and the crunch for money in media, whether it's cable, radio, broadcast TV, whatever. If CNN does not change their act dramatically, they will cease to exist in not that long of time. You can't fund a 24-hour-a-day cable news network with a massive amount of resources, a headquarters in Atlanta, with thousands of employees, when you can't even pull 500,000 viewers in prime time. It's just not, long term, there will not be money there to continue to support that outlet. You're already seeing it. Major layoffs at networks like CNN, and it's only going to continue because nobody wants to watch the garbage and the crap that they claim is news. Put that in air quotes. So it's going to be very interesting to watch and see what these outlets. Now, MSNBC is a different animal. While I don't agree with MSNBC, I don't particularly like their content. Unlike CNN, MSNBC, and I've always said this, and I've gotten some pushback for it in the past, but MSNBC is very clear as to what they are. They are a left-leaning cable news network. I don't have an issue with that. The same way that Fox News is a right-leaning cable news network. I don't have an issue with that either. That Fox and MSNBC are very clear with who and what they are and where they stand. MSNBC plays towards and expresses that they are a left-leaning cable news network. I'm okay with that. CNN, on the other hand, always attempts to claim that they're calling balls and strikes fairly, that they're shooting straight down the middle in their coverage, and everybody knows that that's BS. Because that's not what they do. They don't shoot straight. They are a left-leaning cable news network that tries to portray themselves as some group of centrists. If you look back at what CNN was when it started 30 years ago, that's exactly what it was. It was a news network. They read the news all day. But that's not the case anymore. I've had CNN on for hours over the last couple of weeks, tens of hours. And it's blatantly obvious that they are not a centrist network. They're not attempting to report the news. It's one of the reasons that I think it's cool that the BBC World Service is in on this YouTube TV kind of quad box thing of channels. At least from what I've seen with the service that they have on YouTube, they're like literally just reporting the news, and they do a pretty good job at it. But CNN, I mean, there is a very real possibility that in the next couple of years, that network continues to change dramatically, having to axe even more of their employees and having to seriously change the kind of content that they produce or literally cease to exist. I'll throw those links over in the show notes if you want to take a look at them yourself. They're pretty interesting. If you want to subscribe to the show and get access to those show notes, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you get access to the daily show notes and more, including our first ever monthly hangout. We're going to be chatting politics, culture, and the news of the day. That is one of the perks of subscribing over at Patreon. That's going to be happening this Thursday night at 7 p.m. If you are subscribed to the Patreon, go ahead and check your account. You should have gotten an email or a notification last night about that post. There's the link to the Zoom in there. Looking forward to chatting with everybody. Grab a, as I put in the note, grab a beer, some wine, whiskey, whatever it is. We'll chat politics for an hour or so, and we'll be doing our first monthly hangout coming up Thursday night, 7 o'clock. You can get access to that over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. We've got a couple different tiers available, $5, $10 a month. If you think you're getting some value out of the show, would appreciate your support. And we've already had some very generous individuals come in and support the program. We thank them for supporting and helping in the endeavor here. Jay Hill is commenting over on our Rumble channel this morning, says, who would ever have thought that the entire CNN COVID crew would be gone by now? It's pretty amazing. They greatly to such an extent miscalculated what audiences were looking for. And it has come back and bit them in the ass handedly. And I'm not sure there's enough time for them to shift. Because at the same time, I'll wrap on this. At the same time as CNN might try to revitalize themselves, might try and course correct on the kind of coverage that they're doing, at the same time that all of this is happening, outlet like cable television is dwindling in viewership. People are looking for alternative sorts of media. They're going towards podcasts. They're going towards on-demand content. You have very few individuals that are still glued to cable television like they were in years past. So not only does CNN have a huge issue in regards to the kind of content they're producing, but just the nature of our changing media landscape, they're having to face that as well. It seems to me that they are in kind of a doom loop here, and I'm not sure they'll be able to break out of it. We saw their attempt of that CNN Plus. Remember they hired Chris Wallace from Fox News, paid him a gazillion dollars to host some streaming show? It's a complete flop. Nobody subscribed to it, and they got rid of him. I don't know if they got rid of him. He may still be under contract. He doesn't do a show anymore on CNN Plus. The service doesn't even exist. It was around for less than a year. Just a complete flop. Turns out that's not the kind of content that people want to talk about. It's not the kind of content that people are interested in watching. So all of this wraps up around immigration, something that the left now is proclaiming that they care very deeply about. Meanwhile, they didn't care about it in the past. Here's a tweet last night from U.S. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, the official ICE Twitter account. Enforcement update, January the 27th, around 7 p.m. 1,179 arrests 853 detainers lodged. Those are the ICE daily statistics out of midnight yesterday. Bravo. Well done. Trump ran on immigration. Trump ran on border security. It was something that resonated and connected with American voters. And he's doing what he said he was going to do. He is doing exactly what he promised, which is rolling out large-scale immigration raids for dangerous criminals that are in our country, that are already breaking the law. And of course, the media is beside themselves. And then I caught this post from Bill Malusian. This was pretty interesting. Bill Malusian works over at Fox News. He has been like the man in regards to the border for years now. When CNN and MSNBC wanted to ignore the issue of the border, wanted to ignore the issue of immigration, Bill Malusian was down there with his Fox News team covering this literally for hours a day. His tweet reads like this. Per sources, Border Patrol recorded just 582 illegal crossings at the southern border yesterday. So this would have been Sunday because he posted this last night. So just 582 illegal crossings at the border on Sunday. With not a single one of the nine sectors, there's nine different areas that make up the border. That's how they break it up. Not a single one of them hitting 200. Malusian goes on to say, I've never seen anything this low in all of my border coverage. The numbers were already flat/low in Biden's final week, bouncing between 12 and 1,400 illegal crossings daily. But the numbers have been falling off a cliff since Trump took office. The last 3 days, January 24th, 665. January 25th, 731. And January 26th, 582. He goes on to say, to put this into perspective, at the height of the border crisis in December of 2023, Border Patrol hit a record high of 11,000+ illegal crossings across the border in a single day, with the Del Rio sector alone, one region, receiving more than 4,000+ crossings. He says, I'm told there were 582 illegal crossings across the southern border yesterday, with only 60 happening in the Del Rio sector. And there are no longer 1,500+ migrants being released at ports of entry via the CBP1 cell phone app every single day, as Trump immediately terminated the program. He wraps up by saying, it's still very early. We'll see if these incredibly low numbers hold, especially heading into spring. It's a great reporting there from Bill Malusian over at Fox. If you're not following him on X, you definitely need to, especially if you're somebody that wants to kind of keep up to date with what's going on the border in real time. There's nobody that covers it like Bill Malusian. He's at Bill Malusian _ MELUGIN _. Definitely worth a follow over on X. So promise was made on the border. Promise is being kept on the border. However, there's still issues going on because yesterday, Border Patrol agents were exchanging gunfire with Mexican drug cartels. So the Mexican drug cartel was put on notice yesterday that they are no longer in charge of the U.S.-Mexico border. However, yesterday afternoon, Border Patrol agents exchanged gunfire with Mexican drug cartel members on Monday as they tried to bring a group of illegals over the border in Fortin, Texas. The illegals did not make it across the river. Nobody was stuck on either side. And again, this was reported by Bill Malusian, who said this, quote, breaking. Per multiple law enforcement sources, within the last hour, Border Patrol agents near Fronton, Texas, were fired upon from MX, Mexico, by suspected cartel gunmen as a group of illegal aliens were being brought across the river. I'm told that Border Patrol returned fire. Nobody was hit on either side, and the illegal aliens did not make it across. So then you had this, essentially a standoff happening at the border yesterday afternoon with Texas DPS, Department of Public Safety staging military assets in the region, as you can see in some of these pictures here from Illusion. Trump is handling the immigration issue incredibly well. And I'm not that I'm shocked or surprised by it, but I'm glad that he's handling the issue that he campaigned on. It's very easy to run a political campaign and claim you're going to do this, you're going to do that. We see it all the time. And Trump, to his credit, has followed through. And we've seen in just the last couple of days that individuals who are illegally in the country, individuals who have broken our immigration laws, they are being held to account, which did not happen over the last 4 years. And it turns out, contrary to what the left wants you to believe, this is a very, very popular issue. Turns out people want a secure border. People don't want swaths of illegal aliens crossing into their country illegally. I know it's shocking for you to hear, but it turns out that even across wide swaths of the political spectrum, that's something that's pretty popular. We want secure borders. We don't want out of control, runaway immigration. Shocking. So this takes us to some comments from Trump yesterday. He was in Florida at the congressional, each year, each caucus, both the House and the Republicans do a retreat. In this case, it was in portions of southern Florida. And Trump got up and spoke for a little bit of time and talked about some of the deportations that we've been talking about. This is what the president had to say yesterday.
I've also deployed troops to the border, and for the first time in history, we're locating and loading illegal aliens into military aircraft and flying them back to the places from which they came. And very importantly, America is respected again. We're respected again. Isn't that nice? You know, after years of laughing at us like we're stupid people. And as you saw yesterday, we've made it clear to every country that they will be taking back our people that we're sending out, the criminals, that the illegal aliens coming from their countries, we're taking them back, and they're going to take them back fast. And if they don't, they'll pay a very high economic price. And
that's it. Plain and simple. We're doing what we said we were going to do. We're rounding these people up. Yes, we are. And they're being sent back to their home countries because they're not supposed to be here. I don't understand how individuals can rationalize to themselves. I guess it's just complete and total delusion. But I struggle to understand how individuals can rationalize to themselves how it is okay or it is appropriate to have this level of illegal immigration that we had in this country. You can be compassionate about issues across the world. You could be compassionate about horrific living conditions, political prosecution, whatever the issue might be in countries all across the world. It's something that we don't have to deal with, at least to the extent that some other countries do. I am compassionate to that. Every day, I am grateful and fortunate that I was born and live in the United States of America. And I can have compassion for individuals that are not as lucky as I am, not as lucky as most of you are. But just because I have compassion for an issue does not mean that I'm in favor of wide-scale, mass, illegal migration to this country. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. You can have compassion and think, yeah, that's a really crappy situation that some of these individuals are facing. However, they need to go through the process of legal immigration if they want to come to America, the same way that every other country handles immigration. I mean, all of these bleeding heart liberals, you know, they talk about, oh, I'm just going to, when Trump wins, I'm going to move to whatever the hell European country. You can't just show up in a random country and say, oh, hey, I'm a so-and-so from the United States. I'm going to live here now. It's not how it works. But that's what they want in America. Yet the countries, the places that they want to go, because America's now a dictatorship, it's ruled by an authoritarian, all the same sorry liberal talking points about Trump and the Republicans. The countries that they want to go to enforce their immigration laws, at least in the past, stricter than the United States did. So the hypocrisy there is just stunning. And so that takes us to a video that you may have seen on social media yesterday. Selena Gomez, who is I think she's a singer. I'm gonna admit I'm not a Selena Gomez person. Don't really know much about her. I think she was on the Disney Channel. She's 32 years old. I don't even know what generation that would make her. 32 years old, and she posted this on social media yesterday, a video of her crying with a caption that says, "I'm sorry," with the Mexican flag. Take a listen to this and watch this.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children. I don't understand. I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do. I'll try everything, I promise.
Oh my God. I mean, Jesus Christ, give me a break. All of my people are being attacked. Where was Selena Gomez's video when Laken Riley was murdered by an illegal immigrant? Was there a video of her talking about her people being attacked, you know, Americans? How old was Laken Riley? Poor 20-year-old college girl minding her own damn business, going out for a morning run, only to be brutally assaulted and murdered by an illegal immigrant that Joe Biden allowed into the country? Was there any wailing from Selena Gomez when that was taking place? Was there any wailing from the left?
I'm so sorry. All of my people are being attacked. I can't do anything about it.
Spoken probably from her $20 million mansion somewhere in West Hollywood. It's pathetic. These people are absolutely pathetic. They're shameless and they're pathetic. She's having a complete and total mental breakdown over people who are not legally in the country being deported. Let's just make sure that we understand that we're kind of talking on the same page here. She is having a mental breakdown on social media over the fact that people who are not legally in the country, who broke laws to come into the country, are no longer here. However, these fake liberal tears are only relevant because now Trump's in the Oval Office and they feel that they are empowered to speak out. Again, don't remember a video from Selena Gomez when a poor 20-year-old college student was killed and gunned down in Georgia. I don't remember her being so upset that somebody that was close in her to age, who was doing nothing wrong but going out on a morning run, was killed. I don't remember any conversation or comment about that. I don't remember her crying about that. But now she's losing her ever-loving mind because Trump is doing what he said he was going to do, sending people back to the places in which they came. She then later deleted the post because she got absolutely blown out of the water on it and called out for her hypocrisy, called out for her ridiculous nonsense. So she deleted her post and posted a black screen with text that said, quote, "Apparently it's not okay to show empathy for people." It's got nothing to do with empathy. It's got nothing to do with compassion. You can be empathetic and have compassion for people and at the same time say, you know what? We're going to enforce our laws. There's a lot of people that are food insecure in the United States of America. You're familiar with this phrase? You're familiar with this term? People that cannot afford food? You've heard PSAs on the television and radio for your entire life about it? So are those individuals allowed to go into a grocery store, fill up their shopping cart, and just walk out the front? They're not. So does that mean that we don't have empathy? Does that mean we don't have compassion for individuals that are dealing with food insecurity? That we don't have compassion or empathy for people that don't make enough money to put food on the table for their families? No, we have solutions for that. It's called food pantries. It's called food banks. Just because you don't have enough money to put food on your table does not give you carte blanche to go and rob a grocery store. This is the exact same analogy. You can have empathy and compassion for individuals. Go donate your time at a local food bank. Go donate food to a local food shelter. I would like to drive a brand new pickup truck. But maybe I don't have the money to go drive a brand new pickup truck. But the world should have compassion for me. So I'm gonna pack my happy ass down to a local car dealership and steal a truck. And if you tell me no, if you try and put me in jail, I guess you just don't have any compassion. You don't have any empathy. The analogy here is absurd. Her crying over, quote unquote, her people being attacked. Again, speaking from her mansion in Hollywood. Her people being attacked and she not having any solution forward. Makes absolutely no sense.
Apparently, it's not okay to show empathy for people.
Par for the course, the reason why we shouldn't take political advice from the Hollywood elite. Nobody cares what they have to say. These people are so out of touch from reality with the American people, and it's obvious. So, that brings us to Exhibit A. Tom Homan, who is a straight-up badass, he's Trump's border czar, was on Fox News yesterday afternoon, was asked to react to the Selena Gomez video. You may have seen his clip on social media with the guy screaming about how he's not going back to Haiti. Tom Homan then said, well, no, actually, you're going back to Haiti. This is a Tom Homan yesterday on Fox News, a couple hours after this video made its way out into the public. He was asked some questions about it, and this was his reaction. Take a listen.
I don't know if you've had a chance to see a video that has been going viral over the past hour or so. We're still working to clear it and show it. In fact, the Hollywood celebrity who posted it has now deleted it, I think because probably she faced a lot of backlash for it, noting even the New York Times and Fox News polls show that a majority of American respondents are in favor of deportations of criminals and gang members. She posted a video sobbing. She was crying in it. She said, all my people are getting attacked with the picture of a Mexican flag. Again, she has now taken that down. But what do you say to those who are out there saying that these are everyday people, these are families that are being attacked and dragged out of their homes? How do you respond to that?
I don't think we arrested any families. We've arrested public safety threats and national security threats, bottom line. And look, President Trump won the election on this one issue, securing our border and saving lives. This, what happened on our southern border last four is the biggest national security threat this country's seen, at least in my lifetime, because we got over 2 million known gotaways. We got a 600% increase in sex trafficking. We got a record number of terrorists crossing the border on the terrorist watch list. We have 250,000 Americans dying from fentanyl coming across the open border. We're going to do this job, and we're going to enforce the laws of this country. If they don't like it, then go to Congress and change the law. We're going to do this operational apology. We're going to make our community safer. We're going to save. Once we lock that border on continuous operation, you're going to see fentanyl deaths decrease, illegal alien crime decrease, sex trafficking decrease. It's just all for the good of this nation, and we're going to keep going. No apologies. We're moving forward.
No apologies. We're moving forward. Tom Homan. I know this show is relatively new, so we don't have an award system set up yet. But I believe that we're going to have to start the Badass of the Year award here. We'll come up with some other awards throughout our time. And right now, Tom Homan is a strong contender for that award. He's not sorry, and he shouldn't be sorry. Why should we be sorry? Just, you have to ask yourself this question. Why should we be sorry that immigration laws are being enforced in our country? Why should I have to have some guilt that laws are being enforced? I can't wrap my head around the idea that somehow enforcing laws are bad. I can't wrap my head around this liberal propaganda. And again, my people are being attacked, families are being attacked. Tom Homan says, no families. We haven't started that phase yet. Get ready. But we haven't started that phase yet. We're going after known criminals, rapists, murderers, drug traffickers, human traffickers. That's who we're going after. When we look at this post from ICE out yesterday, 1,179 arrests, 853 detainers lodged. That's who we're talking about. So I guess Selena Gomez is saying her people are a bunch of criminals, degenerates, and deadbeats. Not who I'd choose to associate with. But I'm not in the Hollywood elite, so I guess I don't have that choice. Wrapping up the immigration topic, I caught an interesting article over at WRAL this morning. And the headline is this: the Trump administration to allow migrant arrests at schools and churches, what UNC plans to do. This is pretty interesting. It reads, federal immigration agencies can carry out enforcement in sensitive locations like schools and churches under new guidance from the Trump administration. Under the Biden administration, officers refrained from making arrests in those areas, which often included healthcare facilities, weddings, funerals, and places where disaster or emergency relief is provided, except for certain limited circumstances. The Trump administration is already carrying out step-up and public immigration enforcement efforts around the nation. Those have mostly been in large cities, but the president and his immigration officials have promised large-scale deportations. So we're three sentences into this article, and again, it's not mentioning that we're talking about dangerous criminals. No comments from the illustrious WRAL News that we're talking about deporting criminals and individuals who seek to do harm in America. No conversation about that. The new guidance could impact universities in the Triangle. University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Lee Roberts, who's the chancellor there, who you probably saw rise to some level of prominence when he battled his way back against Antifa and the pro-Hamas crowd and made sure the American flag was flying once again on the Chapel Hill campus. Lee Roberts was asked during a question and answer session with faculty members how the school would respond if they were asked to identify undocumented students. And his response was this, quote, "If we're asked by law enforcement, we're going to comply with any requests from law enforcement about that or anything else." Wow. That's shocking. You're telling me that a publicly funded, taxpayer-funded university is going to comply with requests from law enforcement? Color me purple. Roberts was asked a series of questions about how Trump's executive orders and actions could impact the university, especially around immigration. He responded by saying, quote, "We're going to follow the law. That's been our constant posture, our consistent posture." Shocking. We're going to follow the law. Sounds like the whole real immigration discussion kind of boiled down to this. We're going to follow the law. In a statement, NC State says that it, quote, "complies with all federal laws and is monitoring new directives." Sounds about great to me. We've got laws in place. We've got laws on the books. If law enforcement reaches out to a school, a university, asks them something that they are federally required to respond with, looks like they're going to follow the law, at least here at Chapel Hill. Bravo. Lee Roberts is awesome. And he's saying exactly what I would hope the chancellor of UNC would say. We are going to follow laws that are on the books. We are going to do our job. And we are going to comply with law enforcement. See, it's very hard for the left to wrap their head around this. But when you have laws, they need to be followed. It's kind of how the whole system works. and when you stop following the laws because you feel one way or the other, the whole system kind of crumbles. So that's kind of the status right now on immigration. ICE is doing a hell of a job rounding up these individuals, making sure that our streets are safe, making sure individuals that could fall in similar situations to those like Lake and Riley, making sure those situations do not happen again. And it's having an effect. It's having an impact. And to watch this outrage culture from the left is just absolutely disgusting. As I mentioned at the top of the show, these individuals cared nothing about the horrific conditions that were existing on our southern border. They didn't care about the human trafficking that was taking place. They didn't care about all the drugs, all the fentanyl that was coming into this country, killing tens, if not hundreds of thousands of U.S. citizens. They couldn't give a damn that that was happening. They completely ignored it for years on end. But now, all of a sudden, CNN and MSNBC, oh, they care so much about immigration. Care so much about these poor criminals who broke the law and came into our country illegally. Cry me a river. I don't care. I just don't care. We have rules. We have laws. They need to be followed. Hey, guys, wake up. Wink, wink, nod, nod. That's why Trump won. Turns out the majority of Americans are in favor of enforcing our laws. They're not fans of an anarchist, lawless society that the left wants to usher in, where we pick and choose if we follow laws based on if we like them or not. Is that law compassionate enough? Is there enough empathy written into that law? That's how the left wants to rule. That's how the left wants to operate. Is there empathy? Is there compassion? Doesn't matter. It's a law. And Tom Homan said it so did such a good job summarizing this in his Fox News interview. If you don't like the laws, go to Congress and levy to have them changed. That's our system. It's the same argument we hear about tax code from individuals like Bernie Sanders. And the same kind of crap you hear from Joe Biden in his waning days as the president. Talks about, Jack, the rich have to pay their fair share, and taxes, and they got the wealthy have to start paying their part. You hear what I'm saying? Meanwhile, Joe Biden was in Congress for 50 years, was the vice president, then the president of the United States, and didn't change the tax law. If you want things to change, go levy Congress. If you want things to change, elect individuals to change them. Turns out that's what the American people did. They wanted change. They were in favor of law and order. And the response to that was Trump with a handed election victory. 7 out of 7 swing states winning the popular vote. The left just cannot wrap their head around how they are on the wrong side of history with this stuff, and the vast majority of the American public is not in favor. But they can't wrap their head around it. They have zero ability to look into a mirror or do any sort of inward reflection, reflecting. They are completely incapable of it. And it will continue to lead to Republican success. So I'm all in favor of the left continuing down this rabbit trail. I am all in favor of them continuing with this outrage culture over deporting illegal aliens and people that are not in the country legally, that are breaking our laws, that are stealing from our stores, that are murdering American citizens. If the left wants to try and protect those individuals, I am all for it. Please continue down that path, because it is only driving more and more people to the sane side of the political aisle. Just unimaginable. But that's, well, exactly what's going on. Don't forget that you can follow me over on X. Keep up to date with news throughout the day. It's x.com/Nicholas M. Craig. If you're a user of the platform, I'd appreciate a follow over there. And keep up to date with everything that goes on here. We've got a busy day tomorrow here in North Carolina. The General Assembly is set to reconvene to really kick off their 2025 legislative session. That stuff will be happening throughout the day tomorrow. Make sure you give me a follow on X over there. Well, there is an exclusive story over at the Wall Street Journal this morning that has got some potentially some pretty big implications for U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. We'll get to those details coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show this morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live on this Tuesday morning on our YouTube, Rumble, and X account. Don't forget, you can check out the show 24/7 by searching for The Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. And if you are so inclined, give us a subscribe and follow there and rate the show. Give us a five-star rating if that's what you think it's worth over on your favorite podcast app. It's The Nick Craig Show, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. So, U.S. Senator Tom Tillis could be under some major heat this morning. There's an exclusive that ran over at the Wall Street Journal last night. Lindsey Wise has the story in the headline. That's pretty damning in itself. It says this, quote, Tillis assured Hegseth's former sister-in-law her testimony could convince GOP senators to vote no. Now, yesterday morning, we talked about how the confirmation of Hegseth went down late in the day on Friday. It was a 50-50 vote with Tillis voting in favor of confirming Hegseth that was broken. The tie-breaking vote was J.D. Vance, the vice president. With that, Hegseth received 51 votes. He was confirmed. So this story over at The Wall Street Journal this morning is very problematic for Tillis, who has a primary coming up next year. So I just wanted to read through a little bit of it. It says, a key witness in the contentious Senate confirmation of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth was assured by Senator Tom Tillis, of course, here of North Carolina, that her sworn statement would carry weight in last week's vote and could convince Republican senators to oppose the nominee. That's according to people familiar with the events. Tillis personally assured Daniel Hegseth in a call on January the 19th, witnessed by two other people, that if she signed the statement testifying that she believed her former brother-in-law, Pete Hegseth, has an alcohol abuse problem and was abusive to his second wife, it would carry weight and potentially move three votes, his own, along with the votes of Senator Susan Collins from Maine and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. That's according to, I guess, at least this case, three people that were the person on the call and two other individuals that were part of the and heard it. On Friday, Tillis became the 50th senator to vote yes on Hegseth, clinching his confirmation to lead the Pentagon. In a statement, Tillis did not dispute the Wall Street Journal's reporting about the call. He said that Danielle Hegseth's statement, quote, did carry weight, which is why I communicated my concerns to the White House and spent days doing my due diligence to see if there were any firsthand corroborating accounts of the sworn statement. He continued that he was, quote, not able to speak with anyone who provided firsthand corroboration. Tillis said he did extensive research, including long conversations with Hegseth, and his vote, quote, makes it clear where the facts ultimately lied, and that he looked forward to working with the new defense secretary. In her sworn statement released last Tuesday, Danielle Hegseth said that she decided to come forward publicly, quote, at significant personal sacrifice, because she was very concerned about Hegseth leading the U.S. military and, quote, because I have been assured that making this public statement will ensure that certain senators who are still on the fence will vote against Hegseth's confirmation. But that, but for that assurance, I would not subject myself or others referenced to in this statement to the public scrutiny this statement is likely to cause. Now, as you're well aware, Republicans have a 53-47 majority in the Senate and could only afford to lose three votes on any nominee. Now, the article then goes through some of the back and forth with Murkowski and so on and so forth. But this headline in itself is very problematic. Senator Tom Tillis has got multiple issues that he's dealing with right now. He continually tries to play both sides of the aisle. And this is probably going to come, now, some of you probably aren't going to agree with this, and that's fine. This is my thought on it all. I am okay with individuals trying to cross the aisle. Now, I don't think that needs to be common practice, especially not when you've got a 53-47 majority. I wish we could get back to where actual compromise could be made. And when I say compromise, we're not talking about modern compromise in politics. Because the word compromise right now means Democrats get everything that they want, Republicans get nothing. That's what compromise has been in government over the last decade plus. Republicans have to quote unquote compromise. We get nothing, they get everything they want. That's not what I'm talking about. There is a place in government to work with both political parties to accomplish great things for America. And when those situations arise, I have no issue with that taking place. But unfortunately, I believe Senator Tillis often finds himself in a position where he is doing more of that than individuals probably want. And he is not in favor with many voters in North Carolina. He has got a major primary that is coming up, potentially a major primary coming up in about a year. It'll be March of 2026. And then we'll be on to a general election in which he is likely to have to face former Governor Roy Cooper as the Democrat nominee. There's a very strong likelihood that Roy Cooper will be running for this U.S. Senate seat sometime next year. Roy Cooper is a very popular individual. I'm not a big fan of him. I'm sure most of you are not. But you can't argue the facts. Roy Cooper is very popular. Through everything that went on with him in the governor's mansion, his approval rating was almost always above water. There was a very short period of time, right around COVID, when bars and restaurants and places of business and worship and gyms were shut down, that Roy Cooper briefly dipped below 50% approval. But after that, he has consistently been above that, even with Joe Biden trailing 20-plus points underwater. With that, Roy Cooper, still very popular governor. So not only is Tillis potentially going to have a serious primary in March, he's then going to have to battle against one of an incredibly well-known and well-liked Democrat for this U.S. Senate seat. So the way in which he operates over the next 12 months or so is going to be very pivotal for him. And it's going to be very pivotal for Republicans who have had two Republican senators for the last couple of years. And so when a headline like this comes out, that Tillis is saying, well, you know, you got to really make sure you release this testimony because it could convince other GOP senators to vote no, that's problematic. Now, what Tillis says in his defense of this, you know, he says that the statement, quote, did carry weight, which is why I communicated my concerns to the White House and spent days doing my due diligence. It sounds like you're trying to sink the nomination. When you're telling somebody, well, make sure you put your neck out on the line for this because it can carry some serious weight. It sounds like you're trying to work, in this case, against Trump's nominee, Pete Hegseth. That's how the headline reads. Now, I'm sure Tillis will say, no, that's not what happened. That's the headline is broadly mischaracterizing the conversation. That's not what the intention was at all. But that's how it reads. And the issue that Tillis has got here in North Carolina is he's already very unpopular amongst what we'll call the grassroots of the Republican Party. I mean, he was censured by the state GOP. So it's not a far stretch to say people that are already on the fence or already don't like Tom Tillis see a headline like this over at the Wall Street Journal and go, what the hell is wrong with this guy? He has got to be very, very careful with how he operates over the next 12 months. He tries to be a coalition builder. Again, I don't have an issue with that. But there's a time, there's a place. He had major issues within the first Trump administration. There were issue after issue in which he was actively advocating against things that Trump was supporting. That's an issue. And I know plenty of voters in this state that are not fans of Tom Tillis. So if I'm him, I'm staying out of the fray for the next 12 months. And I am backing Donald Trump 150% of the time. Because contrary to what, you know, Republicans want to believe, and I'm not sure that Tillis believes this, but I'm sure some do, the party is currently owned and operated by Donald Trump, whether you like it or not, whether it's a good thing or not. He is the man steering the ship. And your option is very simple. Stay on board or jump off. But voters are not going to take very well, especially with what they dealt with in the first Trump administration. Voters are not going to take very well to these kinds of headlines. Voters are not going to take very well to these kinds of comments being released after the fact that it appears that you were attempting to potentially sink the nomination of Pete Hegseth. That is not going to play very well. And it shouldn't, because it's ridiculous. So we'll likely see over the next couple of months some individuals throw their hat into the race for this primary. The question's going to be, are there any serious contenders? Or is it just a bunch of, you know, are there just 14 Republicans, none of them which have any name ID, any way to raise any money, attempting to primary Tillis? If that's the case, Tom Tillis will win his primary. And then Republican voters are going to have a real predicament on their hands come November of 2026. Do we vote for Tom Tillis? Do we leave it blank, or do we vote for Roy Cooper? Because that's probably the option that you're going to be left with. So we'll track Tillis over the next couple of months and see how he operates in regards to the Trump administration. Because it's going to be not only pivotal for North Carolina, it's going to be pivotal for the midterm elections. And what does the Republican makeup look like? Is Trump able to get 2 good years in the Oval Office or four? That's what's going to be riding in 2026. We'll have a link to that in our show notes over at Patreon, patreon.com/The Nick Craig Show, where you can get access to bonus content, including our daily show notes. Coming up later on this week, we are going to be hosting our first ever monthly hangout. It's a Zoom meeting. We'll be chatting about politics, whatever is going on this week. We'll be talking about all of that, kind of a roundtable discussion. That'll take place this Thursday night at 7 p.m. So if you are if you're interested in getting in on that, you've got just a couple of days to head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. Subscribe to that. We've got a couple of different tiers available, $5, $10 a month, and you can support the show financially that way and get access to this bonus content, like these monthly hangouts that we'll be doing from time to time. So that is going to do it for a Tuesday edition of The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, available 24/7 via podcast. Just search for The Nick Craig Show. We will preview the General Assembly and their busy day expected in Raleigh tomorrow, plus all of the news of the day, including the first White House press briefing. That's coming your way this afternoon. We'll have a full recap of that coming up tomorrow morning as well. Thank you so much for joining me on a Tuesday edition of The Nick Craig Show. We're back tomorrow morning. Have a great day.